I'm John Rothman.
And I'm Mitch Tuckman.
And you are listening to the Retire With More program. We are delighted to have you, and we have a very special program today, a very special guest. Mitch, take it away.
Well, today we are honored to have Tony Robbins on our show. And so instead of introducing Tony directly with all of the things I could say, I'm going to ask you a question, Tony, just to get this conversation going, okay?
Okay.
So, Tony, you are the world's leading authority on leadership psychology. You've coached and inspired more than 50 million people, CEOs like Mark Benioff, local guy here who's done a lot of great stuff in San Francisco, and some of the world's most high-achieving people around. More than 4 million people have gone to your live events, and Oprah even calls you superhuman. And so, Tony, against all advice from friends, even your publishers, you as an outsider decide to go write a book. And I've read it, and I'm in the financial services business. It's complex. 600 pages, you trying to distill the complex world of finance. Why on earth would you go write Money, Master the Game?
Well, it's interesting. It began because of 2008 when I started seeing. I grew up dirt poor, and we had no money for food at times, even at Thanksgiving. And it's one of the reasons that, you know, I've fed 42 million people over the years, and this year I'm feeding 100 million people. And I did it with these book proceeds was part of it, and I added a bunch of money to it. But what it drove me was seeing all these people literally losing their net worth, half of it overnight, you know, seeing people losing their homes en masse. Those weren't statistics to me. I mean, I lived that life. And so I'm fortunate enough to have a privilege, and that's access. I've been coaching a man named Paul Tudor Jones, who many people know is one of the top 10 financial traders literally in the history of the world. This is a guy who in 1987, when the stock market had its largest drop percentage-wise still in history, 20% in a day, made 200% for his clients that year, made a fortune that day. You know, I was working with him. I worked with him for 21 years. He hasn't lost money in 21 years. I mean, how many people do you know at this scale on earth can say that?
Yeah.
And not only that, but, you know, in 2008, when the market says, you know, we're down 51% from peak to trough, he made 28%. So I have a tremendous level of insight because I've been coaching him for 21 straight years, literally every day. He writes to me. I see him in person. And so the level that I've been able to absorb in the financial area is beyond what most people have the chance to know in their lifetime. And I thought if I could add to that by, say, interviewing 50 of the smartest, most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nobel laureates, self-made billionaires, hedge fund founders, and I could find out what are the common denominators, I'd really have something to add value. I could help, you know, a millennial who's just getting out of college and thinks they'll never be financially fit or free, you know, what do I do with all this debt? Or even a baby boomer who maybe didn't do so well in 2008 and they haven't gotten back in the market and they think I'll never retire. If I could help them, it'd be a worthy task. And then if I could find a way to take this and help people that society's forgotten, you know, the 49 million people in this country that, you know, including 17 million children that wake up every morning not knowing if they're going to have food or not, that it would be something that I could sink my teeth in. So it was a four-year journey, and I loved it. But you're right. Everybody told me not to. Paul Peter Jones told me not to. So Tony, this is too complex. There's no way you can do this. And he's one of my dearest friends and obviously believes in me. My publisher said, Tony, I'll give you a sizable additional bonus if you don't write. He said, I said, why would you say that? And he said, because, you know, it's an industry and it's a category that's been picked to death like a scavenger. There's nothing left. And I said, that's because there hasn't been a great book in this area because it's based on individuals' opinions. I'm like, none of this book is my opinion, other than how to shift yourself psychologically and emotionally, because that's been my 38-year expertise, right, around the world, you know, millions, tens of millions of people. But when it comes to the financial side, I want to bring the best that exists on earth. People have made money in the worst times, made money in the best times, and simplify that so it can be done. So it came together, and I actually saw my publisher. The book's been number one as the New York Times number one business bestseller for 4 straight months, 17 straight weeks. And I saw him just a couple weeks ago, and he said, there are a few words in the English language are better than I was right. I said, I don't want to be right. I'm just glad it all worked out. So I feel really grateful that people who normally will not open their doors will be able to give me this much time. I asked for 45 minutes. My average interview was 3 hours. You know, Jack Bogle and I spent 4 hours. He said, he gave a quote in the book where he said, Tony came by for 45 minutes and 4 hours later, I had the most provocative and profound discussion of my life about my career and my insights. So, you know, Ray Dalio gave me insights that he's not shared with anyone. He made that very clear in his entire history, you know, 23% returns for 21 straight years. So I'm really pleased to be able to bring this to the general public. And if you're unsophisticated, you can start with this book. And if you're sophisticated, you go straight into the greatest, you know, masters of finance and see directly what they have to say.
Well, one thing that I just loved about it is you've rattled off a lot of very sophisticated investors like Paul Tudor Jones, but no one has heard of Paul Tudor Jones unless you're ultra wealthy or you're running an endowment and you know or have access even to, well, access to his fund, which I'm sure most, I bet he's been closed for a long time. But
he has been, yeah.
But at any rate, I mean, what you've done, though, is you've interviewed all these people and then you've brought it down to the guy with a couple $100,000 IRA or 401k. And so,
yes.
You know, that's what I love about it. So one of the first steps that you said in the book is if you want to master the game, let's get on the inside. Let's become an insider and know what the rules are. And you start dispelling all of these myths that rob people of their financial dreams. And I just like to discuss a few of them. I mean, I know you went through right. nine of them, and we probably don't have a lot of time here. And we to go through all nine. And we on this show talk quite a bit about the $13 trillion lie that beating the market is a myth. It's just gotten harder and harder. And on our Rebalance IRA Investment Committee, Charlie Ellis has written lengthy articles recently about why it's even gotten harder over the years. At Rebalance IRA, we talk a lot about fees. We bring our clients' fees way down, but those are like a cancer in your portfolio. It's insidious how they erode value. Well, let's talk about, though, I love the way you address the concept of I'm your broker here to help. I love the way you address some of the things about how returns are misrepresented in the media, and it's legal to do it, and some of those things. Can we go through, just click off, I'll guide you on a few that I'd love to talk about. What about the broker thing? I mean, the conflicts of interest in the business.
Well, you know, one of I made a mission to teach people the F word, and the F word in finance is fiduciary. You know, it's not a word the average person, you know, may have heard. It sounds really complex, but here's the crazy thing. You know, you think, okay, everyone's going to tell you, give me your money and we'll beat the market. You've already said it just doesn't happen. 96% of all mutual funds over any 10-year period of time fail to beat the market. So the 4% that do, what's your chance of finding that mutual fund that's in the 4% that beats the market? Well, if you play blackjack and you get two face cards worth 20 and you're playing 21 and your inner idiot says, hit me, you have an 8% chance of getting an ace. You have a 4% chance of finding the right mutual fund. So it's just not true. There are a few, you know, what I would, you know, look at is these weird, you know, unicorn exceptions, like a Ray Dalio, like mm-hmm. a Paul Tudor Jones. But as you said, the average person can't get access to them, so they're not practical. So I think the first thing you got to do is you're not going to beat the market. I think the second thing that you mentioned is, you know, fees. I mean, let's be specific. You know, you use the right word, cancer. I mean, that's about as direct a word as you can use. It destroys your financial future. And here's the simple thing. This is one of the only industries in the world where you can pay 1,000 times more than another person for the same product and not know it. I mean, it's like if I said to you, you can buy a Honda Accord for $20,000 and I sold it to your neighbor for $350,000, you would think he's an idiot and I'm a crook. But that happens every single day in the financial markets because you can go get the index from, you know, Jack Bogle at Vanguard for 0.17%, or you can go get some of the exact same stocks and pay the average mutual fund 3.1% at the same ratio. It's a $20,000 Honda for $350,000. Or another way of saying it would be, if you started at 30 years old with $100,000 and you got two other friends and you all get a 7% return and you keep compounding at 7% for 35 years till you're going to retire at 65, you know, what do you have? Well, if you have a 1% set of fees, you have $574,000. Your $100,000 went to almost $600,000. Pretty nice return. But if you would get the same return on the same investments, right, but you had 3% in fees, now you had $324,000. I mean, literally, you're almost losing, almost giving 50% up in fees to someone that added zero value. I mean, there are so many people out there right now. I know you guys are exceptions at what you do, you know, in your firm, and, you know, retire with more. But the idea is you got people that say, oh, we've got Vanguard funds. Vanguard charges 0.17, and then they add 60 basis points or more than 0.5% on top of it. There's one I just saw recently. It is a 401k plan, 110 basis points. So they only charge you 0.17, and then, meaning Vanguard that does all the work, these guys for telling you to buy Vanguard charge you 500% on top of that.
It's insidious.
It's insane. So you've got to educate yourself. You've got to become an insider. What I try to do in the book is give you that. We'll talk about the broker. You know, I'm your broker. I'm here to help. Here's what's true. most people in any industry, including the financial industry, have integrity. The majority do. The majority really do care. The problem is that a broker, which, by the way, there are 327 names that I was able to identify for broker, everything from wealth manager on down, they're just still a broker. What is a broker? Well, the broker may have good intent, but if you go to someone who's a butcher and you say, what's for dinner tonight? He's going to sell you meat. And that's because that's all he carries. He's not a bad guy. He probably eats the meat himself. He's probably an expert on that meat, but he's got a limited selection. If you went to a dietitian, they would say to you, wait a second, I don't make money off meat, and you don't want to be eating this much meat. You're going to get cancer eating this much meat. You know, we need to put some salad in here. Maybe you have some fish. Let's cut back on these things. And that's really what a registered investment advisor does, or a fiduciary, because legally, that broker might have the total positive intent, but legally, he does not have to put your needs ahead of his own. He just has to show that whatever you're investing is suitable. You know, what is suitable? Well, it aligns with your goals to some extent. You'll never get sued for that. Versus the fiduciary, if he said buy Apple today, and later he buys Apple at a cheaper price on the same day, he's got to give you the stock he got cheaper because he had to put your needs first. He couldn't be making a benefit off you in that area. So it's a unique approach that fiduciaries have. There aren't that many. You're one. You understand as a registered investment advisor.
Sure.
I'm a giant promoter of saying, look, it's not enough to have somebody that's sincere. They can be sincerely wrong. You need somebody that's tied legally to put your needs first. Now, I would add one more piece.
Okay.
And that is, you don't want just the, you know, some people would be better off, frankly, and I know Charlie would agree with me. Charlie Ellis would agree with me. Also, I know David from Yale with Swenson, who's, you know, greatest institutional investor, I would say, in history. It took them from $1 billion to $24 billion in 30 years, so mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I know they'd agree that a lot of people would be better off, you know, if they've got a small amount of money, maybe they just put it directly in index funds. So I know that some people are self-doers, but my experience is if you get somebody who's a fiduciary who can give you the expertise they have at a reasonable price, under 1%, that person can usually do a really great job for you as long as they're not, you know, getting a commission, they're not passing those things. So I created a site called PortfolioCheckup.com. And at PortfolioCheckup.com, you can go in and get the answer that most of us don't know. You can link all your accounts in a few minutes, wherever they are, and then you can say, how much am I really paying in fees? And you get the reality check. You can look at that and you can say, okay, how much risk am I really taking? And you can make a comparison to what other portfolios are. And then you can take that and do it yourself. Or you can be recommended to an RIA like yourself with somebody who's got integrity. But I think there are RIAs.
Tony, I hate to interrupt. I'm the bad guy. We've got to take a break. We're going to come right back. Remember, www.rebalanceira.com. When we come back, more with Tony Robbins. I'm John Rothman.
And I'm Mitch Tuckman.
And you are listening to the Retire With More program. Our guest is Tony Robbins. And Mitch, why don't you pick up where we left off?
Tony, we were talking about your book, Money, Master the Game, the best-selling book, and it's about money and finance. And we were talking about some of the myths that you help dispel in the book. And we were going through the last few ones on the list. What about the ones that you call the lies we tell ourselves? I love that one.
Well, you know, that it's interesting. There's all the things that the financial industry does to make things complex and to make you just give up and basically give them their money so they can charge you these crazy fees. Again, there are a lot of people with enormous integrity in that business. But the system is not set up for you to win. The system is private corporations, which their job is to make a profit. And so they're not evil. They're trying to do what they're supposed to do, make money for their shareholders. But that's not make money for you. And so I really believe that if you can get through all that, then you got to get through your own limitations, which is, you know, oh my gosh, money is the root of all evil. Or if I make a lot of money, then I'm not spiritual. And so what I try to do in the book is show you that if you're going to become an insider, you got to understand how the game is played, but you also got to understand what your own limits are. I always find in any business or in any investment approach, people, the biggest limitation they often find is in themselves. And so I give you a set of tools to uncover what they are and dispel those myths, just like you're doing with the other financial myths that are out there. But really, you know, one of the myths that I think would be useful to highlight for a second, if we could, is, you know, I interviewed all these people, and I'm talking to some of the greatest investors literally in the history of the world. And some of them are people I interviewed before they passed. Like some people may have heard of Sir John Templeton, the first billionaire investor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Extraordinary man. You know, Charles Schwab, Mark Faber, T. Boone Pickens, I mean, Ray Dalio, some of the greatest names, Warren Buffett. one of the things that I found is they all have different approaches to investing. And so, you know, people say, well, that's confusing. I said, well, no, let me show you how to set yourself up to win the game, and then let's look at what best aligns with you. And so when I did that, though, I did find there was one thing as a myth that I had. And the myth was I thought that these multi-billionaires that started with nothing must have taken gigantic risks to get where they are. And the truth of the matter is they all live by one universal principle at that level. And it's something most investors, average individual investor, never heard of. It's called asymmetrical risk reward. It's a big word. What does it mean? It simply means they do not risk a lot to make a lot. They are obsessed with finding what's the least amount of risk I can possibly take with the greatest potential upside. In other words, how do I risk a little and make a lot?
Mm-hmm.
And the way in which they do that is really interesting. Paul Tudor Jones does it by, I've worked with him for 21 years, making sure he does this, is every time he makes an investment, his question is this a 5-to-1? If I risk a dollar, can I really make 5? Now, he knows he's going to be wrong. So if you risk a dollar trying to make 5 and he's wrong, you can now risk another dollar. He's only risked 2 to make 5. He can be wrong 4 times out of 5 and still be great. Or a better example might be Kyle Bass. Kyle Bass is a man who's very famous because he took $30 million of other people's money and converted it to $2 billion in 2 years, if you can imagine that.
Jeez.
And he did it in the worst economic crisis of our history. Now, I spent days and days with him. I know him very well. He's a good friend now. But I can give you the whole game of how he did it in one distinction. He never risked more than 6 cents to make a dollar. Most of us risk a dollar to make 10 cents, 10%, or a dollar to make 20%, to make 20 cents. He risked only 6 cents to make a dollar. In other words, if he was wrong, he'd risk another 6 cents. Or risk, he could be wrong 15 times and still make money. I'll give you a more simple example that might make sense. Is, you know, most people admire Richard Branson. And most of you think of Richard, he's a friend of mine, as a huge risk taker. And you'd be right. He's a risk taker with his life, but not in business.
Yeah.
It's crazy. He'll go on a balloon where he can kill himself, jump on a boat. You know, we're going on his you know, spaceship together. I mean, those opportunities are scary, crazy, take your life at risk. But when it comes to business, his number one question is, how do I protect the downside?
Mm-hmm.
And when he does it, I'll give you a perfect example of asymmetrical risk reward. When he started Virgin Air, his biggest risk is you're buying these, you know, whatever, millions, tens of millions of dollars Boeing jets. And so he went to Boeing and made a deal that said if he failed, if the business didn't work within 2 years, he could give back all the jets with no downside, no liability. So check this out. No downside, all upside. That's the way these people do it. And you might say, well, Tony, I don't have access to a hedge fund guy, so how am I going to do that? Well, if you work with somebody who's a really great rich investment advisor and they're sophisticated, they might say to you, you know, you might take a look at some alternative investments. You might look at trust deeds where you can do a one-year trust deed, and you can provide the money for that trustee which with a promise of payback. And today, I get 10% returns on one-year trustees in marketplaces where I know I've looked historically. In 2008, worst time in history, they didn't drop 50%. They may have done it over 3 years, but not a year. So my risk is extremely low. Extremely low. It's never happened in history. My upside is 10% versus 4% on, let's say, a junk bond, which is kind of crazy. And I'm getting a nice return with some asymmetrical risk rewards. So there are many ways that you can do this without being involved with a hedge fund. And I think from what I heard about what you guys do, Mitch, I mean, you're looking to use ETFs. You're trying to find the greatest leverage, the least amount of risk, the least amount of cost possible. So it's the same type of thing. But I think asymmetrical risk reward is something that people look at. I'll give you one final example. With Kyle Bass, I said, how would you explain this to a child? He said, I had to explain it to my kids. I said, perfect. How'd you do it? He said, the answer is nickels. I said, what do you mean nickels? He said, Tony, I asked myself a question that most investors don't ask. I said, where can I get a riskless return where on day one I have a 10 or 20% return on day one and I have no risk? I mean, any one of us would say that's impossible, but he's obsessed. And so he came up with nickels, and here's what he figured out. The U.S. government at that point was spending 9 cents to make a nickel, which you wonder why our government's in bad shape financially, right?
Right.
Of that, he found that the actual nickel itself, the actual, it's not just nickel, it's materials that they use, was costing them more than nickel, 20%. In other words, if he buys nickels, the day he buys them, they're worth 5 cents. They'll never be worth less than 5 cents, so they'll never go down in value. So whatever he invested, it's never going to go down in value. But the day he bought it, it's worth 20% more in just melt value. And I said, well, you can't really melt money today legally. And he said, that's true, Tony, but look at what's happened with pennies. They used to use copper, and then it cost way too much to make a penny. The government finally woke up, and they used tin. And now those 1 cent pennies Some of them are worth 10 cents. The average one is worth 2 cents. It's 100% return. He said, if I could push a button, give her all my money in nickels tomorrow, he said, I'd do it. So he said, what I did with my kids was I bought $20 million of the nickels. And he said, I went to the Federal Reserve. And he said, I got 20 million nickels. And I had my kids come in and see this. He's got this room full of nickels. And he said, I just wanted to show them there is a way to have riskless returns that are guaranteed if you think creatively enough. So, you know, nickels might be the ticket for something.
You know, Tony, the way you're talking, I think we might want you to be the next Secretary of the Treasury.
Well, you know, speaking of risk, you know, like you, when I learned from David Swensen, I read his book, but it was a life changer for me. We've been lucky enough at Rebalance IRA to have Charlie Ellis, who oversaw that committee, on our investment committee. But Charlie recently said that Swensen's greatest attribute is controlling risk and playing not to lose. So as a authority on leadership psychology, I have a question for you. You deal with high-achieving people. You try to get people to become higher-achieving people. And that's all about playing to win, right? Playing to win. And I find, though, that investing is more about playing not to lose. And so when I talk to clients at Rebalance IRA who are high-achieving people who've made enough money to invest, and I say to them, this is about playing not to lose. This is about protecting the downside. Let's invest in the global economy. Let's keep our expenses low. Let's make sure we have exposure in all the asset classes, you know, and all of the normal things you covered in your book. How would you recommend for me as an RIA that I talk to clients that are high achievers that they've got to change their attitude from playing to win to playing not to lose?
Well, nobody likes that. That's not a psychology most people like, and yet you know what you said about David is absolutely true. I got to spend quite a bit of time with David and follow up with him multiple times. Every one of these investors, their first obsession, Paul Tudor Jones' first obsession is not losing. And the reason is they understand something. So I'll ask the average investor, I'll say, tell me something. If you lose 50%, you know, how much do you have to make to get even?
Mm-hmm.
And the average investor says 50%, and you and I both know that's not true.
Right.
You start with $100,000, you lose 50%, you got $50,000. If you grow 50%, you're only at 75. You got to make 100% to get even. People don't understand the geometric impact. So what I try to do is rather than start out with saying we got to play protection, I usually start out by getting them to see that two things are important. Here's what it really costs you if you lose, and this is what the greatest investors on earth know. Second thing that I try to do with those individuals is I get them to see, look, if you can put yourself in a position where you don't lose when everybody else does, you're richer. So I'll give them examples of that. But I use what I call my core four. My core four, I didn't put in the book because it kind of evolved after it. I thought, all the things I've learned, the book takes you step by step through them all. But if I'm looking to build an asset allocation, which, as you know, is the secret to all investing, that's the one thing in common other than getting in the game, reducing your fees, you know, knowing how to win the game, knowing the numbers are going to really win the game versus the way you're probably taught traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
It comes down to asset allocation. And when I do it, I look at core four. My core four is number one, and I've learned this, every investor, every RIA, every person that advises me, my first question with them now is, how do we not lose money? And I use the way I educate them about that is use all the investors I've talked about. I give them examples, just like I did with you here, to Richard Branson, because everybody thinks these people are giant risk takers. They're not. They're just not. It's just mm-hmm. They protect themselves first. So I get everybody anchored on that. And then the number thing I do is, okay, where's the asymmetrical risk reward? On my assets, I want to make sure there's a significant amount in there where I have huge upside with very little downside. And when I question them, show me that. Show me where it is. Can we find the right mix that can allow me to do that? Then my third one came from David Swensen more than any other. I asked David, I said, if you want to get greater returns, what are the things you can manipulate? He said, Tony, you can only manipulate a few items. You can manipulate, you know, which stock selection you make. You can manipulate the timing. And he said, you can manipulate asset allocation. He goes, and of those three, asset allocation is the only one that matters because you're going to be wrong on timing and it costs you money to get, you know, some advice and you're going to be wrong on a lot of those pieces. So asset allocation is the most important thing. Diversification is the most important thing, like you guys are teaching. But he said the other one is really making sure that you also, the third principle I use is tax efficiency. Because you and I both know you don't get the money. It's not what you earn that matters. It's what you keep that matters.
Sure.
You can't spend what you earn. You only spend what you keep.
Mm-hmm.
So tax efficiency, you know, he would not have the returns he has. David Swensen at Yale, you know, $1 billion to $24 billion if you'd be in taxes. I give the example of the book. Most people know compounding. If you compound a dollar, it's $2. Compound it the next year, it's $4. Compound it $8. You know, you do that 20 times, you have $1,048,000. But if you just pay 33% tax each year, and most of us have more than 33% tax, especially people listening in California, So if 33% tax each year, what do you end up with? People think, well, 33%, it was $1,048,000. I get, well, what, $700,000, $600,000? No, no, no. You have $28,000 left instead of $1,048,000.
Tony, I'm glad you're doing this because April 15th is fast approaching. And of course, we have to take another break. But I want to remind our listeners that we are very fortunate to have with us Tony Robbins here on the Retire With More program. And you can find out more by going to rebalanceira.com. And when we come back, Mitch, I'm going to ask you to continue the line of questioning with Tony. And Tony, all I can say is I'm so glad you're with us right here on the Retire With More program. I'm John Rothman.
And I'm Mitch Tuckman.
And you are listening to the Retire With More program. Our guest is Tony Robbins. Those of you who have been listening to the first two segments know he is a phenomenal guest, someone who really knows what we are talking about. We want everyone to retire with more. So, Mitch, take it away. Let's go into the next segment.
So we're talking to Tony about his best-selling book called Money, Master the Game. Tony, there was a whole section, one of the seven steps, it's an intersection between what you learned by interviewing 50 luminaries in the investment business. And it's also an intersection between that and what you've been doing for a living for all these years in leadership psychology. You found that most people have no idea how much their dreams to achieve financial security or independence really cost. You gave a great example of a kid you asked, you know, what do you want? I want to be a billionaire. And then when you got right down to it, you found out that the kid could achieve everything that he wanted with $10 million. And you provide some exercises in the book about how to drive these dreams into one's deep into their mind. It reminded me a lot of that old book, Think and Grow Rich, which as a young man I read many times. But can you talk to us about how we can define our dreams and then make the game winnable? I just love that, make the game winnable, because dreams are dreams unless you have a plan. Love to hear more about that.
Well, it's interesting. You know, the vast majority of people have been given advice that's 20 or 30 years old and inaccurate. You know, in fact, I saw on USA Today 2 weeks ago, there was a story and they're saying, you know, how much do you need to set aside to retire? And the person said 8 times your income. And I thought, where on earth did they come up with that? I remember they used to make 10 times your income, meaning if you make $100,000 a year, you need $1 million to retire. Well, to do that, you know, most of us know the 4% rule is dead, but for simplicity's sake, let's just use simple math. Where are you going to get $100,000 a year out of $1 million? That means you're going to be getting about a 10% return if you're not going to be reducing, especially if you're younger, and most of us are living a much longer than we ever dreamed of living, and that's going to get geometrically better since they've digitized more of our DNA and digitized health. Just like digitization has changed the tech industry, is now about to change our biochemistry on a major scale. So everyone's living longer than they ever were, but we're about to see a geometric change in that again. So you got to think in terms of how am I going to get a return? Well, you're going to get a 10% return in a secure environment or 12%. It's just not going to happen. Not in the world we live in today with suppressed interest rates. So I look at this and say, here's what you got to do first. First, you got to break this into multiple numbers. Here's like, what's your number? You know, here's what you got to know. You need to start with a small goal, you know, a goal that's within reach so you can achieve. We all build on success. We don't build on failure. If you've got this huge number in your head, somebody say, okay, what's really real? Well, what's really real is probably 20 times your income. 20 times my income. So if I make $100,000, what are you saying to me? You're saying I got a $2 million? Well, at a 5% return for the rest of your life, you know, that's probably closer to reality, right? You're going to have quality of life because there's also going to be inflation. You got to remember that also.
Mm-hmm.
So what's interesting is that seems so big. Here's what I do with people. I say, let's start with a short-term goal called financial security. And think about the word financial security versus financial independence versus financial freedom. You know, which one is higher, security or freedom? Not hard to figure out, right? Security is a lower-level goal. So I said, let's define it in very specific terms. All right, here's what I have people do. I ask people, how would you feel if you had enough money, enough income coming in off your investments in a secure environment, you don't have to think about it, where the income itself would provide for six things. It would pay for your mortgage for as long as you live, never have to think about your mortgage payment again. and pay for all utilities, provide for food for your family, transportation, and your basic insurance. Those mm-hmm. five things. How would you feel? Most people go, my God, that would feel, that's most of my expense in life. That would feel incredible. You're right. And here's what's cool. That number is at least 60% less than the number you would normally think of. And you would still work, but you'd work not because you have to for those major things. You work for the things that you really enjoy. And here's what I know. If you look at all the research today, when I was growing up, the goal was get rich and retire when you're 40 or 50 or something, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Today, the goal, you know, my friends, you know, Mark Benioff is a dear friend. He's 50 years old. I know he'll be working when he's 75. There's no question. My friends that are 75. Steve Wynn in Las Vegas, right? Multi-billionaire. You know, he's worked more today than he ever has. Warren Buffett's in his 80s, what, 84 now, 85? Works more today than he ever did. The goal today is, if you love what you do, research shows people that make $750,000 a year, if you make that much money, 90% of those people say they'll never retire, or the earliest they would is 75. And most of the healthy 75-year-olds I know are working because they do it, not because they have to. The goal in finance is to get to a place where you don't have to work. It's not to work. There was a statistic that was done, it was published in a medical journal in Britain recently, where it showed if you retire at 55, the average person dies in 10 years. If you do it at 65, the average person dies larger than that. I think it's, 14 or 15 years. It's like if you retire and you don't have a meaning for what you're doing with your life, if you don't have a greater purpose, that's not the goal. The goal is do what you love, and if you don't have to work, you work differently. So I said to people, let's get it so you don't have to work for these five items, and then let's work part-time for the other stuff, and then let's set a new goal, financial independence, where it's the lifestyle you have today without working. Right, that number is going to be a bigger number. And then maybe there's something called financial freedom. It's a better lifestyle than today without ever having to work. But, you know, I've been fortunate enough to hit that target a long time ago in my life. I work harder today than I ever did when I had to work. I mean, but I do it because I love it, you know, and I'm able to do things like feed 100 million people. I mean, it's inspiring. Taking care of yourself and buying toys or cars or planes or all that stuff is really a great privilege. But it will never excite you as much as thinking that you can change someone's entire life, or you can change a community, or you can change somebody, and that you have the resources to do it, economic resources, time resources. So I get people to set very specific, measurable goals. And you can figure out what financial security is by adding up the cost of your mortgage, your utilities, your average monthly food, what is your cost, you know, for basic travel and basic insurance, and you'll know what that number is. And then I show you next how do you put together the asset allocation that can really get you there.
It's great. It's great. And I also love some of the things you address about how to really deeply internalize those goals so they sort of manifest themselves while you're doing whatever you do. And it only comes from having goals that you believe are achievable deep down inside.
Yeah, the term is absolute certainty. I mean, you see it in if you watch the NCAA championships or you watch any time, you watch a player go out there and you go, he's going to miss that free throw. And everybody, most people paying attention, know he's going to miss. How do you know? Because you can feel while he has the talent, he's missing the certainty that'll get you to execute. If you got a goal, but you don't have a plan that makes you certain you can achieve it, you're not going to execute. You're not going to follow through. You're going to have this idea you keep talking about. And I think that's the biggest challenge for most people. They just don't get started. So when you make the goal reachable, when you make the goal where you feel you know you can do it, then you're willing to take action. And when you get action on the first one results, now you reach for the larger one. And everybody gets momentum, right? Well, you know, there's nothing, you can't build on failure, you only build on success. So when you make this goal, that's this huge goal, like the kid who told me, I need $1 billion to be financially secure, you know, what I did with him is I said, okay, tell me everything you want. He wants the Gulfstream. He wants the island. And I know I am fortunate enough to have those things. So we went through what the price of those things really were, add them all up. You could have all those things for $10 million in terms of the interest on it would pay for those things to have that lifestyle. So you don't, you don't have to be a billionaire to have an extraordinary lifestyle. You just have to understand what it's really going to take. And until you sit down and put a price on your dreams and find out what they really are, it's different. Like, why would you go buy a brand new plane for Hole when he could just charter the plane for the, you know, 10 trips a year he wants to take his family? It's a big difference between paying $56 million for a plane or $4,000 an hour.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
So it's a different game, and that's part of what I really show people how to do in the book.
Cool. Well, let's go back to these interviews. You did these 50 interviews with these legendary financial experts, even our own Rebalance IRA investment committee member, Burt Malkiel. And I got to tell you, what you said in the book was great. You said that listening to Burt talk about investing was like listening to Bruce Springsteen playing acoustic guitar in your apartment, playing Born to Run. Yeah. And I got to tell you, at our investment committee meeting in New York last January, we gave Bert a lot of grief about that one. It was very funny. And he said that even his kids and grandkids are teasing him endlessly to this day about that comment. Although I don't know that his grandkids even know who Bruce Springsteen is, but that was great. But of all of these guys you talk to, and again, some of them are, you know, hedge fund guys, but which of the interviews, you know, if when you're talking to a regular everyday person with a few hundred thousand dollars working for retirement, which ones stand out the most that gave a few great pearls of wisdom for that person that they could execute?
There are so many, but I think if I had to narrow it down, I would say Ray Dalio. Again, the average investor probably never heard of his name, but you know, wealthy people, when they have money, they tend to go to people that have hedge funds, and hedge funds have the ability to invest in the market on the way up, on the way down, a variety of, you know, assets that they're involved with. And a really large hedge fund might be, let's say, $15 billion. Ray is the largest hedge fund in the world, but he's 10 times bigger than the largest one. He's $160 billion. He manages money for China. So I ended up, you know, it turned out he was a fan of my work and listened to my audio programs for decades. So he really opened up and gave me the time. And, you know, my last question, you know, for all of them, at some point in the interview, I asked all of these investors, if you couldn't give up any of your money to your kids, not a dime, and you wanted them to succeed, what would be the portfolio? What would be the asset allocation? What would be, you know, the set of principles that you would teach your kids to make them financially successful for a lifetime? And Ray had the most interesting response. He said, I spent a decade of my life answering that question, and I have the answer. I said, wow, what is it? He said, well, you know, there's an illusion that most investors have. They go to a traditional financial planner, and they say, as you get older, we're going to change your asset allocation. We want to make it more so you're more protected. So we're going to do like 60%, let's say, in equities, stocks, and maybe 40% in bonds is a typical example. And you have now, quote, a balanced portfolio, or 50-50. And the problem is nobody pays attention to the fact that when we have these giant drawdowns, like 2000, 2008, you had a, you know, peak to trough 51% drawdown, that these people lost money on their bonds and their stocks. They weren't protected at all. This whole theory is total bullshit, mm-hmm. he said. Mm-hmm. And he said, so what happens, though, is the market eventually comes back, and all the, you know, advisors just focus on the fact the market's doing well, and nobody addresses it. So he said, I decided I was going to address it. It took 10 years to do it, and I discovered something. It's really simple. When people say they have a balanced portfolio, they're not balanced at all. They're balanced in the amount of money, but they're not balanced in the amount of risk. And risk is what makes you or breaks you. And so we created something called risk parity, and here's what it is. If you're, say, 60-40, 60 in equities, 40% in bonds, you're really, since equities are three times more volatile than bonds, he showed you that you're 90% at risk and 10% protected. And this is something that very few people on earth understand. And so what he did was he said, you know, here's what's interesting. There's only four things that change the market. The changes in inflation or deflation move prices of all assets. And whether the economy is growing or shrinking, those four elements, up and down inflation or deflation, growing a market or decreasing market or economy, I should say, are what move different assets. And they all do well at different times. They all have their own season. And so he said, I created over the years, you know, this approach that allowed me, he called it all weather, to make money no matter what market it is. And so I make a little bit less return. You know, he's known for making 23% for 21 straight years, you know, before fees. But he said, I decided I want something where I could make a 10% return, 11% return, a 12% return on average, but where you didn't have the volatility, you didn't have the stomach problem.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, Tony, I hate to do this to you, but I've got a break that I've got to take.
Oh, go.
We're 75% done. We're 75% done. You get a 25% more. Our guest is Tony Robbins. We're on the Retire With More program right here on Talk 910. I'm John Rothman.
And I'm Mitch Tuckman.
And we are the Retire With More show, and we are delighted to have Tony Robbins with us. His best-selling book, Mitch, in this last segment, I know you've got some critical questions for Tony.
Sure. So, Tony, we're talking about in your best-selling book, Money, Master the Game. You interviewed all these legendary investors, and we were talking about Ray Dalio, and I had to interrupt you before the break, but you were talking about the sort of all-weather portfolio. So why don't you finish that thought? It was really great.
Well, here's what's interesting. You know, Ray's whole idea was, how do I, without knowing what the market's going to be 20 years from now, when I'm gone, be able to have something that'll prosper for my kids and for all the philanthropic things I'm involved with. In other words, I got 1,500 people right now at Bridgewater at his fund working around the clock to get the best ideas. But if I wasn't here, how could we win? And what he said was, listen, the average person can't take the volatility. Dalbar did a research project, showed the last 20 years in the market, the S&P did 9.2% compounded, but the average investor saw 2.5%.
Yes.
That is insane. How is that possible? Fees, and we all do the opposite. We sell when we should buy, and we buy when we should sell. And it's the volatility that kills us. So he said, I went in and said, how do I get less volatility with the greatest return? And so he created this all-weather, and he's done that for his top clients. So he explained to me the details, how it worked, what it worked, and I said, okay, I'm going to put this in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, there's just one problem. You've told me the principles, but you haven't told me the percentages. And we all know when it comes to asset allocation, you live and die by your percentages, right? You're the wrong percentage, you're not going to work. And he said, well, Tony, you know, you're asking me to give my secret sauce. That's what I get billions of dollars for. I mean, you have to have you have to be $1 billion net worth and give at least $100 million to me to start for me to even take any money from you 10 years ago. And today I won't take your money no matter who you are. He said, that's my point. Give it me the secret sauce because I'm going to give it to the average person. I'm giving it all away. I'm not even making money. I'm giving the book away. I'm like, these people, we're going to feed people this book. I said, you can't take any more people. You've got the insight. Give me the secret sauce, because otherwise you're telling me, build a chocolate cake, use chocolate, use sugar. Well, yeah, how much?
Right.
And he started laughing, and I finally got him laughing so hard and intrigued him. And I said, look, you're going to give away half your net worth anyway. You're one of the most generous human beings. Give me the formula. And he goes, well, it wouldn't be perfect. I said, your idea not perfect. And this is the guy they call the Da Vinci of investing, or like Steve Jobs of investing. Said, your idea not perfect will be better than anybody on earth. He said, well, I don't want to do it with leverage. I said, design one without leverage, because this all weather has leverage. He said, well, we'll do this all season. And he started listing this, and I got chills down my spine. When we went out and we had it tested by an outside firm, you know, most people back test something and see how it did. And, you know, we always say, you know, the past doesn't guarantee the future. Because most people back test for 5 years or 10 years. Well, we back tested this for 75 years, the entire modern period of investing. 75 years. And in 75 years, it made money 85% of the time. But here's the real killer. When it was wrong, it didn't make money. The 15% was wrong. It only lost an average of 1.6%. If you think about the last 10 years, say 2000, 2008, 50% drawdowns, the largest drawdown in 75 years was 2.95%, less than 3%. It gets better. So I put this out. And then last year, there's some people, there were a couple bloggers that, you know, were in the RA business. One guy managed $100 million, not a billion, not $160 billion. And so Tony made this up. Ray Dalio would never do this. And of course, he's completely wrong. But to give you an idea, last year, as you know, the S&P was up 13.69%.
Mm-hmm.
This all seasons was up 15.3%. If you came to the, you know, if you remember October of last year when the Dow lost 1,000 points, the people were freaking out, you know, the market, the S&P was down 6%. This was up 0.2%. You come to the first of this year, January 2015, you probably remember the first 7 days of this year, you're in the business, the S&P was down 3%. This was up 1%. Today, I looked it up this afternoon, the all seasons, you know, iShares S&P 500 is up 1.35%, the all seasons up 2.98%, more than 50% better. Now, it's not supposed to beat the market everywhere, but if I was saying, what's an asset allocation with the least amount of risk, and a significant nice upside that's averaged over 75 years, just under 10%, with the least amount of volatility, this is something I'd certainly look at as a portion of somebody's portfolio. And it's a gift from one of the greatest investors in history, and it's something he's never, ever shared. So it's quite a privilege. I actually spoke to Ray today about it.
No, that's very interesting. I found the concept of long treasuries in that portfolio a very interesting idea. But obviously, there's something to it. Ray Dalio is one of the kings of investing. Let me ask you about women, Tony. As RIAs in our business, we're told by the industry, hey, you know, women are sort of underserved because so many brokers and, you know, in a very male-dominated business, women feel that oftentimes they're talked down to, that they ask questions of their advisor and they're not given a straight answer, that there's all kinds of mumbo-jumbo and finance speak. Yet the industry's waking up and saying women control a whole hell of a lot of money.
Yeah.
And we have to learn to talk better to women. You just wrote the book. You interviewed a few women. You've probably gotten a lot of feedback from women. As a matter of fact, Allegra in our office, she calls you the financial babe of the financial service industry. But at any rate, women, let's talk about women for a minute. I mean, what have you learned? What have you seen? What are your observations? And how can people in our business, at our firm, Rebalance IRA, how can we better empower women to do better with their investing?
Well, to me, I would hire some women as your other RIA members of your team with me personally, because women deserve to have somebody that they can identify with who's talented. Mm-hmm. And here's the cool thing. I interviewed Mary Callahan Erdos because, you know, when you get to this level of, you know, the people that literally manage billions, and in her case, she's the first $1 trillion woman. She's the CEO in JP Morgan Asset Management Division. Mm-hmm. And since she's been there, I think, if I remember right, 2009, I think is when she really took over. There's been a 30% growth. I mean, they bought in $500 billion with a T. So it's a different business. She manages $2.5 trillion. Okay?
Wow.
So she oversees these employees to help build this. So I just think there aren't a lot of women that have been dominant in this industry. But people like Mary Callahan Erdos are just, they're forces of nature. And she's proven. I asked her, I said, you know, how did you make it in such a male-dominated business? And she said, Tony, the great thing about Wall Street is, she said, it's an illusion that it's a male-dominated business. It's only dominated because women don't participate and compete. She said, if you could produce results, the great thing about the financial business is it doesn't care what your color is, what your background is. All it cares about is results. If you can produce results, you move up. It's an illusion. It's your own lie that your gender will be there. But the problem is not enough women get into the business from her perspective because they're intimidated or they think they have beliefs, like, I'm not good with numbers. She was fortunate to have a father in the business, and she used to go to his work, and she used to dream about mastering that business. And like anything else, it can be mastered. But I think the one thing that's been proven financially is women tend to be better investors.
Yes.
Because men are overconfident. Mm-hmm. Like, we think we have all the answers. Like, you know, I came back with Ray Dalio's strategy, right? And then I had these bloggers in the venture investment advisory business either say it wasn't true or say Ray is wrong. And they're managing
nothing.
$1 million.
Right. A rounding error.
Full page blog saying Tony Robbins giving terrible advice. If he's telling, you know, we all know he's telling you put the majority of money in bonds, and bonds are going to go down because interest rates are only one place to go. And they don't understand. They're looking at the ratio, not the risk ratio, the dollar ratio. They don't understand a damn thing about what they're talking about. So women will read that, and it'll make sense to them, and they'll invest in it. Men will think, I got a better idea. I'm going to do better than Ray Dalio. I managed $160 billion of 23% returns in 21 straight years, and they're going to criticize it and say it's wrong. I mean, that's how stupid men can be.
Well, you know, we're winding down in terms of time, and Mitch told me as we got into this that you had a final secret that we had to discuss, and I just, in the last few minutes, have to ask you. What is the final secret?
Gosh, so maybe the best way to describe it is to tell you a final little story. I personally, when I was building my business, like a lot of people, you know, you struggle for many years. You're trying to add so much value. I was at a point where I was very, very frustrated. And I was driving home at midnight in this place in California on 57th Street. I remember vividly in my 1968 Baja Bug Volkswagen. And I literally pulled over the side of the freeway, and I had this insight. It was such a simple insight. I still have today the journal I wrote, and I told a full-page journal I wrote, The Secret to Living is Giving. And I realized that my frustration was I was so focused on what I wasn't getting. I wasn't focused enough on what I was getting. I was giving a lot, but I was focused more on what I wasn't getting. And I just shifted my entire focus to giving. And the next 12 months were incredible until I ran into a partner that stole a bunch of money from me. And so I found myself in a place where I lost everything. I moved in this little 400-square-foot bachelor apartment in Venice, California. I was washing my dishes in the bathtub. I had no kitchen. Cooking on a hot plate, sitting on top of a trash can, this tiny little room. And I was literally down to my last $20, $21, $22 and change, whatever I had. And I realized, I got to feed myself. I mean, this is going to be a few weeks before this thing's going to be resolved. I don't have money for my rent. So instead of, like, going out to eat and driving my car, I parked my car and I walked 3 miles and I thought, I'm going to go to this all-you-can-eat salad bar at a place called El Torito. And I'm going to load up for the winter here. I'm going to eat everything I can to make this last. $5.95, I think it was. I don't remember the real number, but it's like $6 if I remember right. But I'm going to sit there and I'm going to look out in Marina Del Rey at all these boats and all this beautiful ocean area and this environment of abundance. So I go there and I eat 2 plates worth of food. And I'm loading up, and what changed my life was this simple moment when the door opens, this beautiful woman walks through the door, so that got my attention, quite frankly. But what got my attention more was I waited to see the man she's with, and I looked down, and he's this little 8-year-old kid. He's in a 3-piece suit. He holds the door for his mom. He pulls the chair out for her. He had such a, he's listening and talking to her with such presence that I just, I was truly moved. So I paid my bill, whatever it was. I got whatever's left in my pocket, $14, $15, $13.50, whatever it was. And I go up to this young man. I just said, I really want to meet you. I said, you're an impressive character. I said, taking your lady out to lunch like this. And I shake his hand. He goes, she's my mom. I said, well, that's even more impressive. You take her to lunch. He goes, I'm only 8. I don't have a job yet. I can't take her to lunch. And I didn't have a plan for this. It was just spontaneous. It was one of those moments that changed your life. And I said, yes, you are. You're taking her to lunch. He looked at me, and I just reached in my pocket. I took all the money I had in the whole world, put it down on the table, found this boy. His eyes got big as garbage can covers. And he said, I can't take that. And I said, yes, you can. And he said, how come? I said, because I'm bigger than you are. And I got him laughing. I didn't even look at the woman. I wasn't doing it for acknowledgement. He giggled so hard. He was so lit up. Yeah, and I flew out that door. And, I didn't have my car. I'm going to walk 3 miles. I should have been thinking, hey, that was really nice. But what the hell are you going to do? You don't have any money for food. What are you going to do? But it was the first time in my life where there was not scarcity in my nervous system. It was like, I went home. I'll never forget. I got the next morning, have no plan how I'm going to be able to have money for breakfast or eat. The mail comes. And there's a man I'd loaned more than $1,000 to maybe 6 months before, and I was doing okay. And I reached out to him probably 5 times in the last 2 weeks, and he never returned my phone call. I was so frustrated and angry. And here I get this mail, old snail mail. I open it up. It's a letter from this guy apologizing, giving me my money back, and giving me interest on it. In those days, it would have been enough to support me for 3 weeks. But here was the kicker. I'm sitting there crying, holding this thing. It was like, okay, I'm set. And I just thought to myself, what does this mean? And I realized in that moment, I did what was right. I didn't do something for positioning. I didn't do it to look good. I didn't do it because I had this great strategy. I just did what felt right. And in that moment, giving what was right, in other words, no more scarcity in me. And I've had 22 businesses with these $5 billion a year in revenue between all my companies. And I've had up times and down times, horrific times, good times. But I have never gone back to that moment of scarcity, and it changed my entire life.
The book is Money, Master the Game, 7 Simple Steps to Financial Freedom. Our guest, Tony Robbins. I want to say thanks, Tony. It's been great. I'm John Rothman.
And I'm Mitch Tuckman.
And this is the Retire With More Show.